Washington Police Chief warns of a major security threat as more than 20,000 armed troops are being mobilized ahead of Biden's presidential inauguration. The Pentagon warns that far-right and white supremacist extremists are actively recruiting in the U.S. military and have gained more support over the past year. Also coming up, a strong earthquake hits Indonesia's Sulawesi island, killing at least 7 people and injuring hundreds of others. Good to have you with us. Our top story, the capital of the United States is beefing up security measures ahead of the presidential inauguration of Joe Biden. The city center of Washington, D.C. is under lockdown with more than 20,000 armed National Guards deployed. Washington Police Chief has said that the U.S. Capitol is facing a major security threat 1 week after supporters of outgoing President Donald Trump stormed the Capitol. State Capitol buildings across the country are also on high alert after the FBI warned earlier this week of armed protests being planned in Washington and all 50 U.S. states. The heavy security measures will run until Biden's inauguration ceremony on January the 20th.
In a vote which fell almost totally along party lines, Donald Trump has become the first United States president to be impeached twice. Before Bill Clinton in 1998, there was only one other impeachment ever, reflecting how highly polarized the nation has become. The impeachment appears totally symbolic. A trial in the Senate and a two-thirds vote in favor is needed to actually convict and expel Trump. The Senate will not meet until January 19th, and Joe Biden will be inaugurated as president on January 20th.
Trump would be out of the office in 7 days. I mean, you know, like, I think that I understand and I'm sympathetic to people who want him out earlier, but I just don't think that it's the a priority of anybody who wants to make sure that this doesn't continue. And the goal should be to cut across the sympathies for these right-wing actions.
Just 1 week earlier, the entire world was shocked after a protest burst into the Capitol building, the home of America's parliament, stopping the counting of the Electoral College's disputed presidential votes. Anger, accusations, despair, and emotional outbursts immediately swept the nation and may not lessen even after impeachment. Some top media have compared the events, which occurred on the date 1-6, to 9/11. The Democrat-dominated House of Representatives successfully charged Trump with incitement to insurrection so quickly that many wonder if they have set a dangerous precedent of a so-called snap impeachment. Worries are widespread that the only practical result of the historic impeachment is even more division in a nation already racked by the coronavirus, racial strife, police brutality, years of tremendous cultural disunity, and economic catastrophe.
I think that impeachment is it's a good side dish, but it should not be the focus of anybody who considers themselves to be on the left. I understand why the center might do that, why neoliberals might do it, but Keynesian, you know, if you will, actions such as the $2,000, universal health care, that these things need to be put forth to undermine the growth of the right, the growing right, which I don't think impeachment is going to address.
The controversial decision of the House of Representatives came after the FBI warned that armed anti-inauguration protests are expected across all 50 state capitals starting on January 16th and ending on Inauguration Day at the earliest. The United States will remain in a historic state of tension and animosity until then, and maybe even long after. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Pentagon has warned of an increase in far-right and white supremacist extremism in the U.S. military over the past year. An unnamed senior military official said radical groups are actively recruiting U.S. military personnel into their cause. The official added that extremist groups are also encouraging their members to join the armed forces to acquire skills and experience. Active duty service members and veterans, as well as police officers, were among the U.S. president's supporters who stormed the Capitol last week. The Pentagon says it will launch an investigation into the extent of extremism in U.S. military ranks. This after 14 senators called for the, quote, alarming trend to be immediately addressed. Let's cross over to Tampa, Florida, joined there by Life Malcolm, a community organizer at the African Working Class Representative. What comes to your mind when you hear a story like that, white supremacist extremism in the U.S. military?
Several things come to mind. One, there's no such thing as a white supremacist, just people who are delusional when they call white people who have always believed themselves to be better than African people and other oppressed people around the world supreme in any way, shape, form, or fashion. White people have been brilliant at naming and renaming, defining and redefining the reality that most people in the world live in. So there's no such thing as white supremacists, just colonialists and capitalists who've always been about the business of oppressing and exploiting African people and others around the world since they brought us here, since they invaded the shores of Haiti, Jamaica, and other areas of the world, since they stole the land here from the indigenous people, the so-called Mexicans and others. These people aren't supreme in any way, shape, or form or fashion. They're just terrorists, colonists, and capitalists who exploit people all around the world. This idea that the military is recruiting these people is also redefining that the capitalist, rather that the colonizer has been brilliant at, as I mentioned before. If you can think back to the so-called Iraq war and the terrorism that supposedly took place in institutions like Abu Ghraib, the Abu Ghraib prison, you might recall that there's this guy named Grainer who ran that operation, who was in charge of the sodomy and the other types of brutality that took place in those prisons. That guy was trained at SCI Green, which is a prison in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So it's the other way around. The domestic military, the police, is the breeding ground for the military that goes around the world and takes and spreads this kind of terror and brutality that in the name of so-called white supremacy.
So, like this extremist ideology that, as you say, those who follow it refer to themselves as white supremacists, has it been fueled by President Trump, perhaps over the past year, who maybe tapped into it and expanded it among the American population for, among the Americans, for political and personal gains?
Certainly Donald John Trump has been great at exposing the colonial conduct that has characterized the United States since its inception. He's not exacerbated it. Perhaps he's emboldened those persons who've always felt that way but didn't have the guts to say it. Another thing that we should realize and consider is that because capitalism is, and imperialism is in a state of decay, is facing near death, white people whose livelihood, whose ability to feed their families, feed themselves, have nice houses and cars and what have you, this whole thing is crumbling down right before their very eyes. Imperialism, colonialism, capitalism is on its deathbed, and white people are in a serious panic. So now you see them making all these desperate moves, even attacking the capital of the United States in Washington, D.C. Not because of Donald John Trump, but because the people around the world who have been oppressed and exploited by the colonizers here in the United States are beginning to be more organized, are beginning to be more emboldened ourselves and coming back for our resources, and white people are in serious terror right now. So they have this knee-jerk response where they must do these, as you phrase it, extreme types of things that we saw take place last week on the 6th.
Okay, Life, thank you very much indeed for that. Life Malcolm there, community organizer and African working class representative, sure, joining us from Tampa, Florida. Now, the New York State Attorney General has brought a suit against New York City's Mayor Bill de Blasio and Police Commissioner over allegations of police violence. The federal lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court in Manhattan alleges that New York police used excessive force against racial justice protesters in May 2019. The suit says law enforcement officers violated protesters' rights by making mass arrests, often without probable cause. In separate statements, de Blasio and the police department said that they supported major police reforms but opposed the legal action. The death of African-American George Floyd at the hands of a white police officer in May 2019 sparked waves of anti-racism protests in the country. Staying in the U.S., where the Labor Department says the number of Americans filing for new claims for unemployment benefits has jumped to 965,000 in the first week of 2021. The department says the figure shows a rise of 181,000 compared with the previous week. This is the biggest increase since the coronavirus pandemic began last March. The data is far worse than what analysts had expected. This comes as the world's largest economy continues to reel from a recent spike in infections. The number of confirmed COVID cases in the United States has exceeded 23 million, with over 384,000 deaths. The U.S. has already started its vaccination program. Colin Campbell joined us earlier with a breakdown of COVID-related challenges the U.S. is grappling with.
There are still people dying every day, several every minute. And this is a very big situation in the U.S. because of the fact that we've never really gotten a grip on the COVID-19 situation. We thought we saw a dip earlier in 2020, where we saw it sort of decline a little bit, but then it spiked way up because people got too relaxed and they did not believe the science. And then we had an administration that did not adhere by the science and did not listen to health officials, and also believed that they knew the best way to go forward without any clear plan. It is now 2021. And we still don't have a clear plan as to how the vaccine should be rolled out across America. There are states that have their own jurisdictions, their own reasons, and their own methods for administering the vaccine. But as far as a large, widespread federal policy, we still don't have one.
China has reported 144 new COVID-19 cases in its mainland as the country continues to witness an upward trend in the number of infected people. The figure is the highest in more than 10 months. China also reported one COVID-related death on Thursday after 8 months. The recent increase in the number of new infections has prompted the country to strengthen its epidemic control and prevention measures over the past days by promoting mass testing, building centralized medical observation centers, and stepping up the disinfection of imported goods. The coronavirus has taken over 4,600 lives and infected nearly 88,000 people in the country. Now, North Korea has displayed a submarine-launched ballistic missile at a military parade in the capital, Pyongyang. The missile was showcased as part of celebrations to mark the inauguration of the 8th Congress of the Ruling Workers' Party. The parade also included the march of the Republic's elite units and rockets, which North Korean media describe as having powerful striking capabilities for thoroughly annihilating enemies outside the territory. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un addressed the assembly and decried the United States as the foremost principal enemy of his country. At least 7 people have been killed and hundreds of others injured. after a massive earthquake hit Indonesia's west Sulawesi. The epicenter of the magnitude 6.2 tremor was 6 kilometers northwest of the city of Majene at a depth of 10 kilometers. The quake came hours after a 5.9 magnitude tremor rocked the same district, damaging several houses. A hotel and the governor's office were among the buildings that sustained severe damage. Indonesia's disaster mitigation agency said thousands of residents have fled their homes to seek safety. The United Nations has strongly condemned the U.S. decision to designate Yemen's Ansar Allah movement as a foreign terrorist organization.
We are struggling now without the designation. With the designation, it's going to be catastrophic. It literally is going to be a death sentence to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of innocent people in Yemen. In my opinion,
the
Gulf
states need to... The World Food Program chief made the remarks during a UN Security Council briefing where he urged Washington to reverse its decision. Also, the UN's Yemen envoy, that is Martin Griffiths, said the designation will have a chilling effect on the peace process in war-torn Yemen. The world body's aide chief, Mark Lowcock, also urged Washington to reverse course, warning that the designation will bring about a famine unprecedented in nearly four decades. On Sunday, Washington blacklisted the Ansar Allah movement, which controls northern Yemen. The decision, which takes effect on January the 19th, has drawn criticism from the international community, including the European Union. A senior leader of Iraq's popular mobilization units has condemned Washington's blacklisting of the group's deputy commander, Abu Fadak al-Muhammadawi. Faleh al-Fayyad, who himself was blacklisted by the U.S. days ago, said Washington's move amounts to a violation of Iraq's sovereignty. Fayyad added that the measure also ignores the Iraqi government and official institutions, as well as the decisions made by the Iraqi parliament. He also stressed that it would be unacceptable to put those who fight terrorists and Takfiri groups on a terror list. This comes as Baghdad has already condemned the blacklisting of Faleh al-Fayyad, who has repeatedly called for the withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq. The Popular Mobilization Units is an official legal organization which operates under the command of the Iraqi Armed Forces. The Turkish Defense Minister says Ankara will not turn back on its deal for Russian S-400 missile systems despite opposition from the United States. Hulusi Akar said annulling the contract on the S-400 import would be, quote, very problematic. However, he expressed hope that a dispute with the U.S. on the issue could be resolved through dialogue. He called on Washington to distance itself from threatening language such as sanctions. Washington slapped sanctions on Turkey last month following its acquisition of S-400s. The U.S. says the Russian missile systems pose a threat to its F-35 fighter jets and to NATO's broader defense systems. Turkey rejects the accusations and says S-400s will not be integrated into NATO. Well, that wraps up our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Nolan was the driving force behind the 2014 insurrection that overthrew the Ukrainian government of Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine and is now set to serve as Biden's Undersecretary for Political Affairs. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Alan McLeod Ryder. This article is published under the heading, "While Railing Against Trump Coup, Biden Appoints Chief Ukraine Coup Plotter Victoria Nuland." Here's the details of this article. Describing it as one of the darkest days in American history, Joe Biden denounced Wednesday, January 6th, spectacular assault on the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., as a coup attempt fomented by Donald Trump. "I wish we could say we couldn't see it coming, but that isn't true. We could see it coming," the 78-year-old Delawarean said. "The last 4 years, we've had a president who's made his contempt for democracy, constitution, the rule of law clear in everything he has done. He unleashed an all-out assault on the institutions of our democracy from the outset. And yesterday was but a culmination of that attack. This is not dissent, it's disorder, it's chaos," he added, calling the events an unprecedented assault on the very fabric of U.S. democracy. Yet, almost at the same time as the future president was denouncing Trump's coup attempt, he was appointing Victoria Nuland, the driving force behind the 2014 insurrection that overthrew the Ukrainian government of Viktor Yanukovych, as his new Undersecretary for Political Affairs. The United States and NATO had been making overtures to Ukraine for some time before the coup, hoping that the country would become the latest post-Soviet state to fall into their fold as they continued to expand eastwards. Yanukovych, however, was in favor of steering Ukraine in a more Russia-friendly direction. The decision spared demonstrations across the country from pro-EU forces. The Obama administration immediately sensed an opportunity, sending Nuland across the world to lead and support the movement. The senior diplomat rallying protesters and was even photographed handing out cookies in the streets. While in the West, the revolt was presented as being led by tech-savvy, forward-thinking students. In reality, most of the muscle was supplied by neo-Nazi militias who helped force through Yanukovych's downfall and continue to hold an oversized role in Ukrainian politics and society. In December, the United States and Ukraine were the only two nations to vote against a United Nations measure combating glorification of Nazism, neo-Nazism, and other practices that contribute to fueling contemporary forms of racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerance. This was done as they felt the resolution could be used to target the Ukrainian government and the U.S. continued funding of it. Leaked phone calls show that Nuland, an American ambassador to Ukraine, Geoffrey Piat, had long conversations about who should make up the post-coup government. Thank you. events of early 2014 spooked Russia so badly that it flew troops into Crimea to annex the territory. The affair led to increasing tensions between the US, Ukraine, and Russia, and almost led to a hot war between the two nuclear-armed countries. In the end, President Obama refused to escalate tensions, and to the point angering many in Washington. Among them seemingly was Nuland, who promises to again be a Russia hawk. As Politico wrote recently, she has been an outspoken critic of President Donald Trump's foreign policy, particularly his appeasement of Russian President Vladimir Putin. In reality, however, Trump was extremely bellicose with Moscow, sanctioning the country, bombing a Russian base in Syria, and letting a number of anti-nuclear treaties expire, much to the Kremlin's consternation. While Vice President Biden's administration also oversaw the 2009 overthrow of the democratically elected president of Honduras, Manuel Zelaya, aiding in his ouster and replacement with a brutal military dictatorship that continues to rule the country to this day. In her memoir, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton boasted that she helped render the question of Zelaya moot. She did so by blocking action from regional bodies like the Organization of American States. Wednesday, January 6th events also resemble a number of other U.S. planned coup d'etats, including that of Venezuela in 2002. With help from the American Embassy in Caracas, right-wing and far-right forces marched on the Miraflores Presidential Palace, joining up with sympathetic military units to storm the building and capture President Hugo Chavez. In the melee, dozens of people were killed and Chavez was overthrown, replaced by a well-known businessman with no political experience. The White House immediately welcomed what it euphemistically called a change in the government. 2 days later, the coup was reversed by a huge popular uprising. In 2018, Mint Press reported that many American far-right and white nationalist groups were receiving training from precisely the same Ukrainian neo-Nazis that the U.S. government had tutored. Those far-right groups were out in force at the Unite the Rally in Charlottesville, VA in 2017, where they killed a counter-protester. Thus, it is eminently possible that many of those storming the Capitol building on Wednesday, January 6th, were taught insurrectionary tactics from individuals trained to do so on behalf of the U.S. empire abroad. A classic case of blowback and an event that allows Americans to experience a tiny taste of what it has wrought on the world for several decades.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us hear some interesting words about the purpose of creation by God Almighty, as bequeathed to us by the Lady of Light, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He originated things, but not from anything that existed before them, and created them without examples to follow. Rather, he created them with his might, and dispersed them according to his will. Not for a need did he create them, nor for a benefit for him did he shape them, but to establish his wisdom, bring attention to his obedience, manifest his might, lead his creatures to humbly venerate him, and to exalt his decrees.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
قال الإمام الباقر عليه السلام تمام الحج لقاء الإمام.
Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam stated, "The pilgrimage is completed by meeting the Imam."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's a blessing and an honor to have you with us on the program. Now you're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, we find a very interesting dialogue, a golden conversation, if you will, between Jabir al-Ju'fi, who is one of the famous companions of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, and he also happens to be one of the most knowledgeable students of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. Now this conversation between the two is relatively long, but as we move forwards towards the end of this conversation, we find that the points become shorter, but the meanings become more profound. At one point, Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon this truly divinely appointed Imam with divine knowledge, says, "There is no power like the victory over caprice." and there is no injustice like following. So, dear friends, we find that here Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam tells us a very beautiful piece of advice via his student Jabir al-Jufi. Imam al-Baqir says that there is no power like having the power to be victorious over one's fancies, over caprice, over one's whims. This is true victory when we are stronger than what our lowly nafs, the self which commands us towards these instinctual carnal desires or worldly material wealth. When we overcome these whims of the nafs, of the self, then we are truly victorious. And likewise, Imam al-Baqir tells us that there is no injustice greater than following, being subservient to, obeying such lowly fancies and whims and materialistic or bodily desires and caprice. Now, as we have always said, Islam is the religion of moderation. So material wealth in moderation, eating food in moderation, relations with our spouse in moderation, everything in moderation. This is Islam, the religion of perfection. And so, as Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam has said so eloquently in this conversation, there is no power stronger than victory over caprice, and there is no injustice like following and being subservient to caprice. Beautiful words in this dialogue between Jabir bin Yazid and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I am Atta, the host of the program Dialogue. Now, this moment, I invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ayyub Rashid. I hope you enjoy this part and stay tuned till the end of today's program.
Imam al-Baqir, lastly, one point he mentioned is very important for us to remember. He said, Allah ashaddu farahan bitawbati abdi min rajulin adalla rahilatahu wa zadahu fi laylatin dhalma fawajadaha fallahu ta'ala ashaddu farhan litawbati abdihi min dhalika ar-rajuli birahilatihi hina wajadaha. Imam alayhi salam says there is one thing we need to remind ourselves, that is about tawba. He says, a person who does tawbah, you repent to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah becomes so happy with you. And he gives a parable. He said, if you see someone who has lost his camel or horse plus food, he was on a journey and he lost the camel and the food, and he started searching for the camel and food, imagine when he finds the camel and the food, how happy this man will be in the middle of nowhere. He said, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is so happy, happier than the man who has found his camel and food in the middle of nowhere, and he becomes so happy. Allah will be more happier than this particular individual when you do tawbah. We shouldn't delay that. When we wrong ourselves, we need to go back to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in order for us to do tawbah.
thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Among Abu Dhabi's primary objectives in Yemen are taking control of the country's western coasts in the Red Sea, the Bab el-Mandeb, a strait located between Yemen, Djibouti, and Eritrea in the Horn of Africa, and Socotra, an archipelago near major shipping routes. But this hegemonic ambition has never been in the shape of taking strategic locations alone. The story of Balhaf is a case in point. A major oil facility in Shabwa Governorate, turned by the Emiratis into a detention center, among other things. The existence of the Balhaf prison was first announced by the United Nations in September 2019. 2 months later, Armaments Observatory released a detailed report about the facility, which the Emiratis had turned into a military base and a secret prison.
The fact that they've taken over a gas plant essential for the country's energy supply and for its economy and turned it into a detention camp where torture is being reportedly carried on is an indication of just the brutality of this occupation force in Yemen.
Based on witness accounts, the report also accused Emirati soldiers of treating prisoners inhumanely. The UAE had already been accused of running a secret network of prisons across Yemen.
But I think having prisons in other countries, particularly in Yemen, it's difficult to tell what's happening in Yemen because there's a war. So, I mean, it's much easier to hide political prisoners, torture. It's more difficult for human rights agencies to tell what exactly is happening. And it's much easier for the authorities and the occupation forces to deny that these abuses are taking place. So I think having a detention center in Yemen is advantageous for the United Arab Emirates in that sense. Remember that the United Arab Emirates is a country that presents its image of itself as a modernizing country. It's highly invested in technology, and Dubai is a major city in the world, a major modern city, so it would not work to have this kind of brutality on its own shores.
But what made the story strange was the awkward silence of France since the revelation. Given that Total SE, a French multinational oil and gas company, was the biggest shareholder with nearly 40% of stakes, critics said the silence was significant. Recently, the French Parliament has called on Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian to answer questions about the alleged existence of a UAE-built military base and detention center in the vicinity of Belhaf. French lawmaker Clémentine Autain has accused Emmanuel Macron's government of covering up crimes committed by the UAE at Belhaf. The fact is, the UAE has gradually become a crucial partner for France. In the words of French historian Sébastien Nadot, despite their small size and low profile, the Emiratis play a key role in France's international strategy. A rich federation with a big appetite for arms purchase, the UAE is worth enough for the French to look the other way when the Emiratis are violating human rights at Belhaf or anywhere else. In fact, France's silence could be explained by its lucrative partnership with Abu Dhabi, especially in military cooperation and arms trade.
United Arab Emirates, of course, have been relying on French technology. They have the tanks, Leclerc tanks, and Mirage planes, which they've been supplied with by the French. The French continue to maintain those military technologies that they're using, that equipment that they're using, and of course that is a key to their to the war, because the equipment, most of it, is being bought in the West, in particularly in France, and so the French are heavily involved in this whole scenario here, where essentially the country's energy supply is now this major energy plant is now being used as a torture and a prison center.
Despite public outrage, arms deals have been getting bigger over the past decade between Paris and Abu Dhabi, according to the 2020 report to Parliament on arms exports. The first French multi-service military base in the Middle East is located in Abu Dhabi, housing around 700 military personnel. The base includes an air base, a naval base capable of receiving a French aircraft carrier, and an army base.
Well, since 2010, under Nicolas Sarkozy, President Sarkozy, the French have upped their investment in Arab countries, in particular the United Arab Emirates. They even have a military base in the United Arab Emirates, so they have been very much involved in supplying and modernizing the United Arab Emirates their military technology. And so that is the main reason. I mean, that partnership is quite extensive and quite deep. They've even allowed United Arab Emirates to have major exports. Paintings, for example, have been exported temporarily to United Arab Emirates in exchange for continued military contracts. So these military contracts are extremely important for France. I already mentioned Mirage planes, Leclerc tanks, and many more, much more technology. This is a multi-billion dollar industry.
According to Emma Sobriere, for France, a presence in the UAE is strategic and will allow easy intervention to prevent possible disturbances affecting access to Gulf oil. Abu Dhabi is visibly formulating a regional strategy of influence, with a focus on the creation of commercial and military port facilities stretching from the Horn of Africa to the Mediterranean. Given the military background of Emirati Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed, the French have little, if any, doubt that the UAE will continue signing big arms deals with them. According to Jalal Harchawi of Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime, in general, Paris does not want to strike any false note that might spoil its intimate friendship with Abu Dhabi, believing that this symbiotic relationship will, in the years to come, always lead to success.
The idea that France supports human rights and that it has concern for human rights is really a myth. The human rights discourse is really part of the foreign policy agenda of the French. It's about presenting a positive image of France as a moral order, as a moral power, when in reality they have never been interested in human rights. The main interest is in power, power projection, and economic economic exchange and exploitation in particular of developing countries. And the Gulf states allied with Israel and the West are key to that agenda.
Located on the Gulf of Aden coast in the southern part of Yemen, Belhaf mirrors the inhumanity of the Emiratis, who have turned Yemen's major source of income into a secret, macabre prison, and the greed of the French, who seem to have preferred petrodollars to anything else in the world.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran by a shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran by a shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa by a shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
An unrepentant Donald Trump on Tuesday, 12th of January, denied inciting an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to shift blame that Democrats rejected as despicable as a number of senior Republicans began publicly turning against their president. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist David Smith, Joanne Gree, Tom McCarthy, and Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Growing Cohort of Republicans Turn Against Trump as He Denies Inciting Capitol Attack. unrepentant President Donald Trump on Tuesday, 12th of January, denied inciting an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to shift the blame that Democrats rejected as despicable, as a number of senior Republicans began publicly turning against their own president. The president spoke to reporters on the south lawn of the White House for the first time since a pro-Trump mob rampaged through the Capitol last week, leaving five people dead. Democrats accused him of stoking violence, and a vote to impeach him went ahead on Wednesday. "So if you read my speech, people thought that what I said was totally appropriate," Donald Trump insisted as he headed to Texas to tour parts of the barrier he ordered constructed on the U.S.-Mexico border as part of his hardline immigration policies. The president then sought to draw a false equivalence with last summer's mostly peaceful protests against racial injustice in America. He said, "If you look at what other people have said, politicians at a high level, about the riots during the summer, the horrible riots in Portland and Seattle, in various other places, that was a real problem," what they said. Last Wednesday, 6th of January, Donald Trump gave an incendiary speech to a raucous crowd near the White House, insisting his election defeat by Joe Biden could be overturned, and urging the crowd to march to the Capitol and fight much harder against bad people. He said, "You'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength." Democrats have directly linked the speech and previous Donald Trump comments to the carnage that unfolded when rioters, some carrying Confederate flags, fought with police and looted congressional offices on Wednesday, 6th of January. House Democrats have led demands for Donald Trump to be removed or face a historic second impeachment. Meanwhile, a handful of senior Republicans in recent days have joined calls for Donald Trump to go. And crucially, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, indicated to Associates that he believes Donald Trump deserves to be impeached, according to a report by the New York Times on Tuesday. With Mitch McConnell thinking it will make it easier for the party to purge him as a liability. The New York Times further reported that the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, has toyed variously with asking Trump to resign, supporting impeachment, and considering a vote to censure the president. And the senior House Republican, Liz Cheney, said she would vote to impeach Donald Trump. The president of the United States summoned this mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack. Everything that follows was his doing. None of this would have happened without the president, Liz Cheney insisted. "I will vote to impeach the president." As he left the White House on Tuesday, 12th of January, Donald Trump said, "The impeachment is really a continuation of the greatest witch hunt in the history of politics. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. This impeachment is causing tremendous anger, and it's really a terrible thing that they're doing." Democrats gave short shrift to Donald Trump's denial of responsibility. Speaking to reporters in New York, Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, said, "What Trump did today, blaming others for what he caused, is a pathological technique used by the worst of dictators. Trump causes the anger, he causes the divisiveness, he foments the violence and blames others for it. That is despicable. The technique Trump is using is used by the worst dictators the globe has ever seen. Donald Trump should not hold office one day longer, and what we saw in his statements today is proof positive of that," Chuck Schumer said. Federal investigators are warning of additional potential security threats around the inauguration of Joe